So here's the Gemara we're talking about. This is the whole daf, Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph. And I think maybe we should lower the lights a little bit to make this easier to see. Can we... Oh, that's wonderful. No. That's it. Good, that's it. Fine. And so we have this this Mishnah, and it's a very difficult sugya. It's a very difficult sugya. We'll see. Not only for your humble servant, it's a difficult. It was difficult from the very beginning. The Gemara was troubled with it. Tosfos was troubled with it. The Rif was troubled with it. Everybody's troubled with it. Okay, it's a difficult sugya. So we're going to try to explain the sugya. Yeah. First of all, the sugya consists of a Mishnah there and a Gemara. You see the Mishnah? And there's a Gemara, right? And the Mishnah is difficult, and the Gemara is even more difficult, and it's problems. Huh? That's what we make a living from, right? Okay. So we're going to start by explaining the Mishnah. Most of this shiur is going to be about the Mishnah. All right. But we also have to explain the Gemara, and Yetz Hashem, Lineda, will also explain the Gemara, because part of this Shia is the Gemara, an important part of the Shia. So toward the end, we're going to get to the Gemara also. So here we zoomed in on the Mishnah, okay? And let me open the Gemara and look at, we'll read out from the Gemara. We have the Daptim over here. Okay. So let me, let's look at this. Okay. So Mishoy Anasu Sholosh Noshim Bameis. It's a little easier for me in Sfaradit. Okay, so you'll excuse me. Everybody all over the world, you'll excuse me, I'll read it out in Sfaradit. מי שהיה נשוי שלוש נשים ומת, כתובתה של זו מנה ושל זו 200 ושל זו 300, ואין שם אלא מונה חולקין בשווה. היו שם 200 של מנה נוטלת 50, של 200 ו-300, שלושה של זהב, היו שם 300 של מנה נוטלת 50, ושל 200 מנה ושל 300 שישה של זהב. That's the part of the Mishnah that we're interested in. There's one more line which we're not interested in this evening. Okay? So, to explain the Mishnah, we first of all have to say that a dinar shel zahav, a golden dinar, is worth 25 zuz, 25 dinarei keser. So, if you make the calculation, you'll see that what this is saying is precisely this. A man with three wives dies. By the way, Rashi says that in order for this to work, he had to marry them all on the same day. Yeah, and sometimes when I give this shia, which I've given, you know, dozens of times already, people say, if he married three women on the same day, no wonder he died. So a man with three wives dies. The ksuva of the first is in the sum of 100 zuz, of the second 200, and of the third 300. If there is 100 in the estate altogether, they divide equally. If 200, the one with 100 gets 50, the other 75 each. If there's 300 in the estate, the one with 100 gets 50, the one with 100 gets 100, and the one with 300 gets 150. Okay? That's the Mishnah. So let's take a look at this in the in tabular form. Here it is. We have we're just repeating what we just said. Yes, if there's 100, they divide 33 and a third each. If there's 200, they divide 50, 75, 75. If there's 300, they divide 50, 100, 150. That's it. It's very strange. You look at the you look at this table. It's very very odd on the face of it, because proportional division is the last line, right? If there's 300, they divide proportionally to their debts. This is what's commonly accepted among the in the civil law, in their civil law, right? This is commonly accepted, but it also has an important standing in the halacha. Yeah, in fact, there are many poskim who say that that this is the halacha lemaisa. Yes, we'll go into that later. So this is, and it makes sense. Equal division also makes sense. All right. And in fact, the halacha psuka, the halacha lemaisa is equal division. Okay, so that also makes sense. Make up your mind. You want equal division? All right, equal division. You want proportional division? Make proportional division. Okay, but in one case equal, in one case proportional. What is it? What's going on? Yeah, and the middle line doesn't make that at first. Lechora, it doesn't make any sense at all. What's 50, 75, 75? Where does it come from? Yeah. So this is the Mishnah, and gentlemen, I'm not the only one who had trouble with this. Let me show you some other people who had trouble with this. Okay, let's look at this Tosfos. Yeah, you have it in your. I gave it out. Yes. Look at the Tosfos. Dibur Amaschil Teimo. Okay. Lo yadati amai lo mishane b'cholay. This is on the Gemara, by the way. Look in the Tosfos v'chein shlosha she. No, that's not. No, this is not our thing. Look at the Tosfos to Omro. Lo et parish shapir time of the whole milta. Yeah, we don't understand it. Okay. Look at the Tosfos v'kotevet. All right. Lo yada rabbi mai kamashman al matnita. So we have three tosses, one after the other. Yeah, they fire. We don't understand what's going on. Okay, and they stay that way. They stay with. They don't even say tzorichiyun. Yes, sometimes they say with tzorichiyun. They don't even say that over here. They say we don't understand it. Okay, so it's problematic. Let's look into this. This is the Rif right here. Okay. I'll open it in my Gemara over here. Here it is. Okay, so the Rif here on the Daf in front of you, it's Daf Nun Aleph in the Rif. He brings our Mishnah. And then he brings the right away after the Mishnah, he has the following words, and I emphasize them over there. Ha matnitin ugmaradila shaklu v'taru ba kamay zal v'lo sarka lahom kol ikar. This Mishnah and its Gemara were discussed by the Gaonim who came before me. That's what the Rif says. And they didn't understand it at all. The Lo Yatzum is there, yes? It's very sharp language for the Rif, yeah, right? They didn't understand it at all. Not the Mishnah, not the Gemara, yeah? And then he has a I think, I mean, I haven't looked at all the riffs in the Gemara, yes, but on the Sayyar Rabbim, yeah. I haven't studied the whole Shas, far from it, and I haven't, I certainly haven't looked at all the riffim, but this seems to me it's got to be the champion of the length. On a Gemara, which is, what is it, about 10 lines long or something like that? No, maybe 15 lines long, and the Mishnah and 5 or 6 lines. He has two and a half thick tapin. Yeah. It's amazing. Usually the riff shorter, right? He makes in his discussion of the Gemara, he abbreviates it. Yeah, he gives the bottom line. Here it gets blown up, you know, by a factor of 15 or 20. It's amazing. So and this is how he starts. Okay. So I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that this is here. Well, if you didn't see it properly. I have it zoomed in over here. Hag matniten v'gmaradila shakli v'taru ba kamai zal v'lo salka lahon kol ikar. Okay. Now, it's a difficult Gemara. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that it's a difficult Gemara. Let me tell you a little bit about the background of this Shia. Okay, first of all, I have to say this is joint work with Professor Michael Mashler. Okay, who is a professor of mathematics at this university. And by the way, I should mention that right now he's in the hospital. He has an infection which they don't know what to do with in his leg. Part of his leg was already amputated. Right now, yes? And we should all say, include him in Rafaelino, okay? So this is the joint work with him. It was done more than 20 years ago. Yeah. Okay. Now, Professor Mashler and I are both experts in game theory. That's how we make our living, okay? And I'll tell you later a little more about the history of this, what game theory has to do with this. Game theory, let me just tell you briefly what it is. Game theory is the science of rational interaction, one might say. People interacting with each other. They are in some kind of situation where they have to, what each one does affects the other, or sharing, yes, this is a question of division. Division problems have to do with game theory. Interactive rationality, that's what game theory is. And we'll say a little more about this afterwards, right? Because the Shia itself has nothing to do with game theory. You'll see that the Shia has nothing to do with game theory, but it comes from game theory. The background is game theory, and we'll explain that afterwards. All right. Now, one very, very important thing that I have to say right at the beginning is the matter of multiple solutions. Yes, you have a given problem. It could be in game theory, or it could be in law, or it could be in statistics. There are many ways to skin a cat. A given problem need not have just one solution. And we saw that just now, yeah? In this very problem, we have equal division, okay? The halacha, the actual halacha is equal division. It's not according to what's written in the Mishnah. The halacha, halacha psuka, is equal division. You can have proportional division, and that also has a place in the halacha. And you have other ways of dealing with this problem. And they're all divrei Elokim chayim. Yeah, it's a given problem does not necessarily have one solution. By the way, I was just talking about this sugya with Professor Dov Samet today. Now, he didn't know about this shiur, but I was talking for a different reason I was talking about. And he said that it's very interesting, but a professor of law told him that, you know, it says, Shnayim Ozen B'Tale Zeome Kulo Sheli V'Zeome Kulo Sheli, yeah? And the Mishnah says, Ve'yishavah V'Ze'yishavah V'yachloku, they divide equally. If each one says Kulo Sheli. He said, in Israeli law, it's impossible. An Israeli court cannot say Yachloku. If two people come with a talis to the court, and each one says Kulo Sheli, then the judge has to decide to whom it belongs. Yeah? He can't say Yachloku. So even this is something which is, has, you know, Yachloku is not something trivial or obvious when you say Kulo Sheli. Yeah? One might think, well, what else could there be? It's symmetric. Each one says Kulo. No. It's a, yeah? It's like Kulo, called Alim Gbar, yeah? Something like that. Yes. Right. Okay. So we have to accept the idea that a given problem may have a number of solutions, each of which is logical, each of which makes sense, each of which is based in precedent, each of which is based in the halacha, and we have to choose between them, yeah? Or somebody has to, the halacha has to choose between them. And there could be differences of opinion, and nevertheless, each one of the opinions could well be, have something, could well be justified. So when we go and look at a Mishnah and a Gemara like this, we have to ask ourselves, not what I think. Don't ask what's right, yeah? Don't ask what's logical? Yes? Don't ask what's just. That's not the problem. The problem is when you see a Mishnah like this, what did Chazal think? What did the author of this Mishnah think? The author of this Mishnah was Rabbi Nosson, we'll see that later. What did he think? What was in his head? Yeah. What did he think? All right. So it's when we ask, what did Chazal think, then the right way to look at it is not to try to figure out in our heads what seems logical and what seems just. That's not the right way to go, okay? And in fact, when I was in yeshiva already, you know, longer ago than I would like to say, it's about... It's more than 60 years ago already, yeah? More than 60 years ago, we were taught, wir haben feind Beuchteures, yes? We don't like swallows that come from the stomach. We want to hear what other sugyas support the swallow you have. Okay? So we have to look for other places in the Shas where there are division problems. And let's see what other places there are and where we can look. Okay? So we're going to look in the Rif. First of all, we started out with the Rif, and the Rif has a nice long explanation here. So let's look in the Rif. In the Rif, in the next stuff after this, he continues... Okay, so the first daf was this one. That was the first one. And the next one is this one. And I'm not bringing the whole daf, I'm only bringing part of it because the whole daf is too big. And what he says is, V'af Rabbeinu Ay Gaon Zal, Lo Svira Lahai Memra Dekamai, the Memra Pechayu. We don't have to translate the whole thing because it's not the whole thing is relevant. What's relevant over here is that Rabbeinu Haigaon looked at this sugya And he figured, he thought that it has to do with Shnayim Ozen Betalis, with the Mishnah of Shnayim Ozen Betalis, which we just mentioned, by the way. But the Rif doesn't go further in explaining what Rabbeinu HaGaon had in mind. Yeah? He mentions this, and then he abandons it. And he goes a different way. Well, let's give Rabbeinu HaGaon some credit, and let's look at what he was, what he had in mind. So let's look at Shnayim Ozen, okay? Here's Shnayim Ozen. Okay, so here we have the first daf of Bava Metzia with the Mishnah of Shnayim Ozen. And like our practices, we're going to zoom in on it. Here it is. And we will just read the parts that interest us. Shnayim Ozen Betalis. Zeomer kulo shali, vezeomer chetzio shali. Okay? Zenokel shlosha chalokem, vezenokel rabia. Two people come to court, they're both holding the talis. One says, it's all mine, and the other one says, half of it is mine. Here I will put the translation on the screen. Here's the translation. Two litigants claim a garment. One says it's all mine. The other says it's half mine. And the one takes three quarters. And the other one takes one quarter. A very, very famous Mishnah. Every schoolboy knows about it. And here's a picture which maybe not every schoolboy knows about. Here it is. Okay, sorry. Here it is. This is from an edition of the Mishnah in Amsterdam, 1707, according to their figuring. All right? And here you see the two, they're pretty angry at each other. They're both holding the talis. And in the background, you see two Adam. Okay? All right? So that's from Amsterdam, 1707. All right. What's the logic behind this Mishnah? Okay. What sense does it make? Why one half? One quarter, three quarters. What sense does it make? It's not proportional. Proportional would be two thirds, one third, right? It's not equal. Equal would be half, half. So what is it? Well, it's very simple. It's got a beautiful logic, and the logic is right here. The logic is explained by Rashi. V'zeh omer chetzio sheli, modehu shachetzi shel chavero, ve'ein danin ela al chetzia. Hilkach, ma shehen danin alav, notel kol echad chetzio. So, here, what does he say? I'll translate it into English. Rashi says, half of it is mine. Okay? On the words, half of it is mine, Rashi says, the one who says half of it is mine, he admits that half is the other's, right? So there's no discussion about half. Therefore, each one takes half the contested amount. There's no discussion about half the talis, right? The discussion is only about the other half. One says half is mine. So that's what the argument is about. So they divide the contested amount equally. This leaves to three quarters, one quarter. So this is something which is very important. It's the foundation for our explanation of this Mishnah. And let's just sort of nail it down. Equal, the contested garment rule, that's what we're going to call it. Talis is a garment, right? We should call it the contested talis, but sometimes I give this talk to other audiences, they don't know what a talis is yet. So what's a talis in English? Is a palace, right? You know, when I was once on sabbatical in the United States, and we stayed until after the Chagim, Yomim Noraim, and when we came home, somebody asked one of my children, how do you say Rosh Hashanah in English? So he says, Rosh Hashanah. Okay. So a palace is a palace, but anyway, it's a contested garment, all right? So the contested garment rule is equal division of the contested amount. And this is not the only example of it. So the example over here in the Mishnah is that the talis is worth 100, and one claims half the talis, 50, and the other one claims the whole talis, 100, then you divide 25, 75. So that's one example of it. In the Tosefta, I won't take the time to put it on the screen, but the Tosefta to Baba Metzia has on here, if one claims a third of it is mine, and the other one claims it all, okay? Then what is then the one who claims a third of it is mine? Then he concedes two thirds to the other side. So they divide the according to the Tosefta, they divide 1/6, 5/6. Again, equal division of the contested amount. And there's at least one other very beautiful application of this idea, and it's in Yevamos. And let me tell you about it. It's in Yevamos, it's on Daf Lamed Ches. Here's the whole Daf. And again, we're going to zoom in on the relevant part. Safek ubnei Yavam shebau lachlok b'nechsei Saba. Safek amar, ahu gavra b'mitnahu upalga didihu. Ubnei Yavam amri, achunat umanata itlach b'hadam. Palga dekamodi lahen shakle. Tinta dekamodi modulei shakal. Pashludanka v'mamon amutal b'safek. Okay, so I'm going to translate this into English. Okay, what's the story over here? The story is that there were two brothers, and one of them had two sons, and the other didn't have any children at all, okay? And then the one who didn't have children died. So he had to be, the other one with the two sons had to be miyaben his wife, okay? He had to marry his wife, essentially. And he did so willingly, and she also did so willingly, and they were so willing that they couldn't wait 3 months, yeah? The halacha is that after the death of the first husband, who's called the mitna, the dead one, yes, he's called the mitna, yes? Ha'u gavra bar mitna, who, yes? It's called the mitna. After his death, you're supposed to wait 3 months because otherwise you have problems. If she gets pregnant, you don't know who the child came from. He didn't wait 3 months. Yeah, so a child was born. She was pregnant within a month or two of the Yibum. She got pregnant. And the child was born, they don't know who the child is from, whether it's from the mitna or whether it's from the yavam. Yeah. So this kind of child is called a safek. Okay. Now, what happens? What happens is that The Yavam also dies, okay? Either the father or the uncle of the Safek dies, alright? The grandfather is still alive, alright? And then the grandfather dies, okay? So now, who's left is the Safek and the two children, the two sons of the Yavam. So the two sons of the Yavam, they say, look, young man, you're our brother. That's the story, yes? You are our brother, and therefore the Mitna had no children, you're our brother, and so we have to divide the grandfather's estate three ways, okay? And he says, no, I'm not your brother, I am your cousin, okay? So not this, but this, okay? That's what he says. All right. So now the grandfather's estate should be divided two ways between the Mitna and the Yavam. And then the Yavam's part goes to his two sons, and the Mitna's part goes to the Safek. Well, in that case, the Safek gets half. And the other way, the Safek gets one-third. Okay? So, he admits that half belongs to the two sons of the Yavam. So there's no argument about half. They admit that one-third goes to him. There's no argument about one-third, right? What's the odds? So one-third plus one-half is five-sixths, yeah? What's left of the grandfather's estate? One-sixth. That one-sixth is Maman Amutal B'Safek. This is the contested amount is one-sixth. And this, they divide equally. That's what the Gemara says. Okay? And so we see it over here. Here it is. That's the last line. And here, the Safek claims 50, right? And they admit that he gets 33 and a third. Now, so you have to add to the one-third, you have to add one-twelfth. One-third is four-twelfths, so five-twelfths is 41 and two-thirds, and they get the rest. So this is another illustration of this rule, the contested garment rule, equal division of the contested amount. Now look, I want to emphasize one thing again. I want to emphasize the multiple solutions principle. Yeah, the contested garment rule is not something which is obvious. All right? It's not obvious. It's reasonable, okay? But it could also be done differently. For example, proportional division. Equal division. No? You could say, you could say divide half-half. Yeah? There's nothing which is necessary about these things. All right. Having said that, so there's a chiddush over here. The Mishnah, when it says, זה שווה שאין לו בו פחות משלושה חלקים, וזה שווה שאין לו בו פחות מרביע. It's a chiddush. It's not. It's the mission is not saying something obvious. Okay. All right. I want us to understand the contested garment rule. All right. Here's the contested garment rule. Let's understand it. And so we'll do a few exercises. You know, in mathematics, we always have to do exercises. In Gemara also, we have to do chazaring on the Gemara. Yes, if one doesn't do exercise, if one doesn't try to understand it by oneself, you're in trouble. Okay? So we'll do a few exercises. Let's say we have a ksuva of, again, 100 and 200, two ksuvas, two women. We'll just talk about two women. They have a ksuva of 100 and 200, and the estate has 125 in it. So if you want to divide this ksuva in accordance with the contested garment rule, in accordance with the idea of shnayimals, then how would you do it? Well, the balas ha-meor, one who claims 100, she cedes 25 to the other one, because it's all together. She said, no, I'm not claiming more than 100. Okay? So 25 I'm conceding to the other one. You conceded, okay. So the other one, first of all, gets 25. What is left? What is the contested amount? The contested amount is 100. So that you divide equally. So you get 50, 75. Right? Suppose you have two ksuvas of 200 and 300, and you have an estate of 66 and two-thirds. Why am I saying 66 and two-thirds? It's an exercise, all right? So if you have 66 and two-thirds, then each one claims the whole 66 and two-thirds. How do you divide equally? 33 and a third. Everything is contested. Suppose you have two ksubas of 100 and 300, and the estate is 200. So the balas ha-meor concedes 100 to the balas ha-shloshmeos, right? So, first of all, the balas ha-shloshmeos takes 100, and then you divide equally. That 100 is divided, the remaining 100 is divided equally. So the balas ha-shloshmeos takes 100, which is conceded to her, and 50, which comes from the equal division of the contested amount. Now, I'm going to propose a definition. Okay, let's keep these exercises in mind, and I'm going to propose something. We're going to call a division of the estate CG consistent. What's CG? CG is contested garment, okay? So we're going to call a division consistent with the division of, consistent with the contested garment rule. Equal division of the contested amount, consistent with that idea, when, if any two women divide the amount that they together get, those two women together get, by the contested garment rule, which is equal division of the contested amount. All right? That's the definition. What I'm saying is, suppose, not necessarily with the numbers in our Mishnah, let's say any three women come to court and the court gives them some kind of division. And we want to say, does this jibe with the idea of Shnayimos and with the idea of the contested garment? Does it fit? Is it consistent with that idea? So to see if it's consistent, we say, let's take two out of the three women. Let's see what the court gave those two together, then they should be dividing what they together get by the rule of the contested garment. That's the definition, all right? Now, just a second. Excuse me?
The size of the the estate or the debt in the city itself. The size of the estate, which is collateral, that's equal to the sum of what he's to win and get.
The size of the whole estate? No, the size of the whole estate is big. I'm going to clarify that. I'm going to try to clarify this. No. A moment, and then ask it again, and then yes, Hashem, I'll see. Okay? What I'm going to do now is we're going to use these exercises. Okay? And I'm going to show you what I mean by contested garment CG consistency. Let's take the second row, okay? The second row was 50, 75, 75, and there's an estate of 200. Now, what are the first two women, the Balas HaMeyo and the Balas HaMosayim, what do they get together? 50 and 75, by that rule, yeah? The judge gave them 50 and 75. Yeah? So together they get 125. Now let's say that amount that they together get, they want to divide in accordance with Shnayim Olsen. How would they do it? Well, we just did that exercise. Here it is. Okay? Here it is. We just did the exercise. Together, they get 125. How would they divide that? 50 and 75. But that's indeed how they are dividing it, yes? So you see, all right, let's take another case. Here, let's say there's just 100, okay? So the Balas Masayim, Balas Shlosh Meos get 33 and a third each. Together, how much do they get? 66 and two-thirds. How would they divide this in accordance with Shnayim Olsen? They would divide it by 33 and a third each. But that's indeed the numbers that are written there. Okay? Suppose we had, take the last line, 50 and 150. Take these two women, the 100 and the 300 woman. Together they get 200. How do they divide 200? According to Shnayim Olsen, they divided 50 and 150. But that's indeed how they divided by this rule. So again, the CG consistency, well, this is only three. There are nine pairs of women here. Nine pairs, right? Because there are three pairs and there are three amounts of the estate. But so I only gave you three examples over here. You try the other examples, you'll see they all work. All of them work. Okay? I don't want to take the time for that. That's what CG consistency means. Now your question. It answers the question.
Yeah, I have a different question.
Okay.
So this is explaining the Mishnah Kedushuta. We didn't see the Gemara, so this is...
Yeah, right.
But it doesn't address the Mishnah as the...
No, right. But I said I'm going to explain the Gemara. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, B'lin Neida, if God gives me power and time, yes, and Rav Kornfeld gives me time, yes, then I'm going to explain the Gemara also. Right. Okay? It's very important. I want our listeners all over the world to realize that this is only the beginning. I'm going to explain the whole sugya, Mishnah and Gemara in Yirtzeh Hashem. Okay? All right. So, now, that's CG consistency. Now, look, I want you to understand something. Maybe I should put it over here at this point. Caution. CG consistency is not a rule. It doesn't tell you how to get the numbers, how to make the division. No, it's unlike equal division, unlike proportional division, where you have an algorithm to figure it out, yeah? This is not an algorithm. It's a tnai, it's a condition. something that a given division rule may or may not satisfy, or a given division, it may or may not satisfy this, yeah? But it, in itself, it does not tell you how to affect such a division. Again, in Yetz Hashem, I will tell you at the end of the Shia an algorithm for this, but this is not an algorithm, okay? It's just a definition. Now, I'm going to show you, just to tell you that this is far from being a trivial idea, the CG consistency. I'm going to show you, first of all, maybe I'll put it here, that would be better, just to make it clear that there are some divisions that are not CG consistent, okay? Here, for example, the equal division of 200, 66 and 2/3 each, is not CG consistent. Another one that's not CG consistent is the proportional division of 200. Okay? 33 and 1/3, 66 and 2/3, 100 is also not CG consistent. And just to, for the fun of it, we're going to add another one, and that's the last one, which is not CG consistent. It's 50, 70, 80. Yes, 50 is 70. One would think that the Balat Shloshmot should get a little more. So let's say give her 80 and the other one 70. It's not CG consistent. Let me show you why. Here it is. Take the first one, the equal division of 200. The Balat HaMeah and the Balat HaMatayim together get 133 1/3, right? How much? What would be the contested garment division of this? The Shnayim Ochzin division, equal division of the contested amount. Well, what's the contested amount? It's 100, right? The Balat HaMeah concedes 33 1/3 to the Balat HaMatayim. So she takes 33 1/3, and then you should divide equally, 50, 83 1/3. But 50, 83 1/3 is not the same as 66 2/3 each, right? So that's not contested garment, it's not CG consistent. What about the proportional division? In this case, the two first women get 100 together. 33 1/3 plus 66 2/3, they get 100 together. How should they divide 100? Well, they both claim 100, right? So they should divide it equally, 50-50. But 50-50 is not this. It's not 33 1/3, 66 2/3, okay? How about this one? 50, 70, 80. Well, the 70, the Balat HaMatayim and Balat HaShloshmaot get together 150, yes? They both claim 150. So how should they divide it equally? 75, right? But it's 75, 75 is not the same as 70, 80. So these are not contested garment, these are not Toem Shnayim Ochzin. In fact, we have something very interesting. We just saw that, I just showed you, that all three divisions in our Mishnah are contested garment consistent, yes? Moreover, I'm telling you this now, this is not obvious, but I'm telling it to you, and I want you to believe it. In each of the three cases in the Mishnah, the stipulated division is the only one that is contested garment, that is consistent, CG consistent. It's the only one. Yeah. There is no other one. Each one of them is, but it's the only one. And now I'm going to tell you something which is maybe even more surprising. first let's put this on this one. And now,
if there is a solution, then why doesn't that enable you to work out the division, if that's the only solution?
I'll tell you afterwards how. It's not easy to see how to do it, though. Not easy to see how to do it.
You mean how to get there?
How to get there, yeah. Well, what was wasn't that your question?
You said that it doesn't actually, it's not actually a method of division.
No,
there's only one solution.
Yeah.
How to get there might be complicated, but it actually is a method of division. It's only leads to one solution.
You could say so. Sometimes there are problems where we know that there's only one solution, we don't know how to find it. There are problems.
So really, it is a method of division, just we don't know how to use it.
Well, we do, actually, and you'll also know. By the end of the year, we do, yes? But on the face of it, okay? On the face of it, it's not a computational method, yeah? On the face of it, it's not a computational method. It's something where you put in a solution, yeah? You say, does it satisfy this or not, yeah? We have to see, we have to test it, yeah? Like a blood test or something, yeah? We see, does it satisfy it or not?
Schneider-Holstein tells you the algorithm when you have two contestants.
Excuse me?
Schneider-Holstein would tell you the algorithm.
For two.
But now you're saying there's a unique solution for them.
No, I haven't said yet that there's a unique solution for them. I'm about to say it, but I haven't said it yet. I said just for the three things in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, there's a unique solution, right?
Okay, but what the approach is for doing with one or two, that's not stated explicitly anywhere.
Right. Let me just say what I was about to say, okay? And here it is. This is a theorem. You know, like you remember your school geometry, we had theorems there, yes? So this is a theorem. No matter how many wives there are, or how much their ksubas stipulate, or the size of the estate, there's always one and only one CG consistent division of the estate. There's one and there's only one, always. The Rambam talks about Shlomo HaMelech in connection with this sugya, yes, who had 1,000 wives. Also, 1,000 wives. He had 1,000 women. Some of them were wives, some of them were pilakshim, yes. I think he had 700 wives and 300 pilakshim. I don't know whether the pilakshim got ksuvas or didn't get ksuvas, yes. So there are 700 wives and... Also, it'll work with 700 wives, all right? I don't know whether there was enough money in his estate to cover it all. I'm not sure, yes? Anyway, that is the bottom line, yeah? So now, I repeat again. We're saying there's one and only one way to find a CG consistent division of the estate. But what I have shown you doesn't tell us how to calculate that one way. All right? It doesn't tell us. However, it's possible to calculate it. And now, but before I do that, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give a little background, okay? This is really the bottom line, yeah? So what I'm suggesting, basically, is that the Mishnah, the author of the Mishnah, who, as I said, was Rabbi Natan, he was trying to fit this rule. He had this rule in mind. And moreover, although the proof is not something which is entirely easy, the proof of this theorem was within the reach of Chazal, and especially of a very sophisticated Tana like Rabbi Natan, who was known for his sophistication. Yeah, okay? So this was within the reach. You can prove this using words only. You don't have to use symbols or anything like that. I want to make a little bit of a digression to tell you some of the background for this. Did Chazal know game theory? No. The modern mathematical theory of games, I certainly do not assert or want to hint even that Chazal knew about this. So what does all this have to do with game theory? Yes? Why did I mention game theory in a slide a few at the beginning of this year? So I have to tell you the story. More than 25 years ago, I was on sabbatical in the United States, and my son Shlomo was, Hashem Yikom Domo, he was killed in the Lebanon in 1982, Tavshin Mem Bet. He was in the Mir Yeshiva. And I ran across a mathematical paper called by a person called Barry O'Neill, whose title was A Problem of Rights Arbitration from the Talmud. Rights arbitration is what we're talking about, division problems, yeah? Barry O'Neill is not usually associated with the Talmud, a name like Barry O'Neill, yes? But he was not Jewish, he is not Jewish, but he is an extremely knowledgeable, wide-read, and wonderful person altogether. And that's not so much the point, though. Before I knew O'Neill, I sent the paper to Shlomo, to my son, who was at that time in Mir, and I said, Shlomo, your comments, please. Okay? So he sent me back, Abba Tistakel Biktuvot Daf Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph. Dad, look in Suvas Tzadik Gimel Aleph. I looked, I saw this amazing Gemara, and I couldn't make sense of it, yes. But it's true that it was very much in the style of O'Neill's paper. So, after the sabbatical, I came home to Yerushalayim, and I was sitting with Professor Mashler in my office, and we were gazing at this, I put the, this table on my blackboard, and I said, Michael, what can we make of this? Yeah, what does it mean? So we looked, and we tried, you know, just like in law there are many solutions, and in statistics there are many solutions, and in game theory there are also many ways of dealing with a problem. And we tried all of which we knew, and none of them worked. And then one of us said, let's try an approach called the nucleolus, a solution called the nucleolus of a game. Well, the other one said, come on, that has no chance. It's a highly sophisticated notion. There's no chance that Chazal knew about this. So the other one said, it doesn't cost money. Let's try, yeah. And we worked it out. It took us about 20 minutes. And believe it or not, the nucleolus gave all 9 numbers in this. Exactly. Bullet. Yeah. But that, you know, was just the beginning, because both of us agreed that the nucleolus was not something which in itself was was within the reach of Chazal. So then we started looking, what is what are the properties of the nucleolus? And we looked and we looked in the literature, and we found a paper by a Russian mathematician by the name of Sobolev, and he had a discussion of the nucleolus and some of its properties. And one of its properties was this consistency property. What is consistency? that when you take the nucleolus of a big game and you take a smaller game, you take just some of the players in the game, and you look at the nucleolus of that, of what the original solution gives to those two, those smaller players, then it's got to be the same. It's basically this idea of consistency. You said, ha-ha, consistency is something that Chazal could very well have thought of, yes. It could very well. And then we worked on it further and we got these results. So what is game theory over here? Game theory was the key that enabled us to understand what Chazal thought. See, it's really a big chutzpah to come after 2,000 years and to say what people didn't understand, starting with the Gemara, what they didn't understand for 2,000 years, we, this little nothing, Mashla and me, suddenly understand. Where did the chutzpah come from? Yeah? But the answer is that we have a tool that all the previous Mephoshim did not have, and that's the modern mathematical theory of games. It's not that it gives us the answer, but it provides the key to let us into that garden. It's like, once you're in the room, you don't need game theory. Okay? You can understand it without game theory. But this gives us the key to understand what we had and the Mephoshim didn't have is this key. All right. Now I'm going to do two more things right now. One is to give you the algorithm. All right. I'm going to tell you how to calculate a CG consistent solution for any division problem. Okay. So here it is. Think of it this way. You have these three women, or N women, okay? N women, any number of women. and the husband dies, and at first they are told, listen, there are no assets in the estate. The estate is empty. Please go home, we can't help you. We think that you're in... We have a lot of sympathy with you, but we can't give you more than sympathy. There's no money here. And then suddenly a debt comes in. Somebody owed him money from before the Ksuvos, yeah? And they paid, and the money comes in. Now that money is divided equally among the three. I'm telling you the algorithm. I'm not giving you any logic. The logic that justifies this is in this idea of CG consistency. I'm just telling you how to calculate it. So the first zuz that comes in, let's say, is divided equally. Each woman gets one third of a zuz. And the second zuz is divided equally. And every additional amount that comes in is divided equally until the smallest woman, in our case, the Baalat HaMeah, gets half a ktuba, 50. Okay? At that point, she goes out. And that's the point at which the estate holds 150, right? Three women, 150. Now, any additional amount is divided equally among the two other women until the next smallest woman, who is the Baalat HaMatayim, gets half her ksuba. That's, when does that happen? When she has 100, so the Baalat HaShloshmot also has 100, and the Baalat HaMeah got 50, so when there are 250 in the estate, then she stops getting any money. Yeah. This Baalat HaMatay. And then additional money comes into the estate. Okay? And that, the Baalat HaShloshmot gets it all. Every additional zuz, until she has half of her. Yeah? So that's at 300. when the estate consists of 300, she gets that. At that point, we put a temporary stop to the algorithm. Okay, a temporary stop. Now each woman has half her ksuba. What happens if there's more? Okay, if there's more, then we figure it the other way around. We stand on our head. Instead of looking at the receipts, we look at the losses. So now we start from the other end. First, the women get told, listen, there's 600 in the estate. It's just enough to cover all your ksubas. Yeah? Okay? So they're about to get the checks from the registrar of the court when somebody comes in and says, hey, wait a minute. There was a zuz, one zuz of previous debt, previous to the women, to the marriage of the women. Okay, all right, we'll take off the one zuz, and we divide the loss equally now, all right? Each woman loses an equal amount. So the balata matai, mea gets 99 and two-thirds, and the balata matayim gets 199 and two-thirds, and the balata shloshmot gets 299 and two-thirds. And they're about to write those checks when somebody comes in, hey, wait a minute, we just heard of a debt of 19 and two-thirds, okay? So now there's an additional 20, and that 20 is divided equally, and so on. The loss is now divided equally until the smallest woman has lost half a ksuba. So now she's down to 50, okay? And every additional loss is debited to the other two equally until the next smallest woman has lost her half her ksuba, yes? And then each additional zuz of loss is debited to the balata shloshmot. And this works until she also has lost half her ksuba. But when each one has lost half his ksuba, it's like getting half the ksuba. You know, it's the shiloach, yeah, the tunnel that was built and was cut on two ends, and they met in the middle, the tunnel down here in Yerushalayim from the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Okay, so that's the algorithm. Now you could argue, I think the algorithm itself makes a certain amount of halachic sense, but that's not the point. That's not a point I want to sell tonight, okay? That's a way of figuring out, and then one has to prove that this is CG consistent, and it is, and one can prove it, and one can prove that there is only one, so on and so forth. I could do all that. But now I want to fulfill another promise that I made, and that is to explain the Gemara, okay? I want to explain the Gemara. And let's put the Gemara on the blackboard. Here it is. That's it. Let me explain the Gemara. The Gemara starts with Shemane notelet chamishim. Shemane notelet chamishim. This is Bitnia. Taltin v'tlata v'tilta hu de'itla. The Gemara says, when there are 200, why should the lady with the 100 get 50? She should get 33 and a third. Huh? Now, Gemara doesn't say why she should get 33 and a third. She just says, not only she should get 33 and a third, the Gemara says, she has 33 and a third. Who the itla, yeah? She has 33 and a third. All right. And then the Gemara comes and gives reasons, special circumstances, what we call ukintas, that there are special circumstances which justify her not getting the 33 and a third, which she, so to speak, should get, but justify her getting 50. Okay? And then, at the end, the Gemara ends with a brisa that says, Tanya zu mishnat Rabbi Natan, Rabbi omer ein ani roe dvarav shel Rabbi Natan be'elu, ela cholkot be'shaveh. So the brisa at the end says that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi disagrees with the whole Mishnah. Yeah? He disagrees with the whole discussion that came previously. He says that the three women divide equally. That's the Gemara. Now, if you look at the Gemara, you see it's fairly obvious that the discussion that comes before the Braita of Rabbi makes it clear that what the Gemara was thinking of was a different method of division. And the method of division is what I call Shitat HaShiabudim. It's due to the Rif. The Rif explains it in this part that I showed you. He attributes it to the Gemara. He explains the Gemara in this way. So the Rif says as follows. The Mishnah was thinking of Shitat HaShiabudim, and let me explain to you what the Shitat HaShiabudim is. The Shitat HaShiabudim says that the first 100 is divided equally, 33 and a third each. The second 100 of the estate, it's as if the woman who claimed 100, she has gotten her part out of her claim. She claimed 100, but they all claimed 100, right? So she gets, that first 100 is divided equally, and then that first woman leaves the picture. Huh? She leaves the picture, she's out, she has gotten her payoff, nothing more is due to her. The second 100 is still claimed by both women, so they divide this, the second 100, equally. And the third 100, the second woman also leaves the picture, and the third 100 is only the third woman gets. The only trouble is, that doesn't lead the numbers in this Mishnah, yeah? Then I guess they would lead to, for example, in the 200, it would lead to 33 and a third, 83 and a third, 83 and a third, not the numbers that are written here, okay? Not 20, 50, 75, 75. So the Gemara, so if this is what Rabbi Natan had in mind, yes, and the Gemara asks, and that's what they claim he had in mind. Then the Gemara asks, why are the numbers different? Yes? Why are the numbers different? And then they make those ukintas, yeah? And the end, the Gemara ends with saying, okay, that's what Rabbi Natan thought, that Ikar HaDin, the basic halacha is, Rabbi Natan Mishnah is that the basic halacha is, in accordance with this Shitat Shiabudim that I just explained. But when there are, when the circumstances of the Akintas hold, then you get these numbers. And I, altogether, I don't agree with him. I think it should be divided equally. Yeah. And Rabbi, since Rabbi was the editor of the Mishnah, they figured the poskim figured that this is the aloha, and that's how it was decided. Now, what does it mean, divide equally? Okay, so there's a machlokas on what it means. There's a machlokas among the mafoshim, there's a disagreement among the commentators. What does it mean, divide equally? When Rabbi says, cholkin b'shabeh, right here at the bottom of this slide, Rabbi omer, אין אני רואה דבריו של רבי נתן ואלו, אלא חולקות בשווה. See it right there at the bottom? Okay? אין אני רואה דבריו של רבי נתן ואלו, אלא חולקות Shaveh. What does it mean Chokot B'Shaveh? So the simplest answer is equal is equal. They get an equal amount. So if there's 100, they get 33 and a third each. If there's 200, they get 66 and two thirds each. If there's 300, they get 100 each. Yes? All right, that's what Chokin B'Shaveh means. And this is what the Ritz says. It's what the Rambam says. It's what the Tur says. It's what the Rosh says. And it's what the Shulchan Aruch says. But there are some people who disagree. I mean, this looks like an overpowering a battery of poskim, yes? But there are some who disagree. Rabbeinu Hananel, for example, disagrees. Rabbeinu Hananel says, Chokin b'shaveh means proportional division. Okay? Shaveh lefi ma'ot. Proportional division. So if there's 100, they should get 16 and two thirds, 33 and a third, 50, yes? Yeah? If there's 100? What? Yeah. I'm sorry. Did I get it wrong? If there's 100, then they should get 16 and two thirds, 33 and a third, and 50? That's proportional to their debt. Huh? No. 16 and two thirds, 33 and a third, 50. Yeah, if there's 100. If there's 200, they should get 33 and a third, 66 and two thirds, 100. If there's 300, they should get 50, 100, 150, right? That's what Rabbeinu Hananel says. And that's almost all what the poskim say. But there's one who disagrees. And that's the Raivad. Okay? The Raivad says, no. The Raivad says that they Cholkin b'Shaveh means that each one of the three manim, each one of the hundreds, they divide equally among those people who still have a claim on that 100, which is exactly the Shitat HaShiyabudim of the Rif. So the Raivad says that Rabbi, yeah, that Rabbi is posek according to the Shitat HaShiyabudim of the Rif. That's what the Raivad says. And Rabbi Natan also. And that's the Ikar Adil. The Gebaltik Akashia, yes, what do you mean he's passing this way? Yes, Rabbi says, Ein ani roe dvarav shel Rabbi Natan ba'elu, yes? I don't agree with Rabbi Natan. So what are you saying he agrees with Rabbi Natan? Yeah? He says, I don't agree. So what the Raivad says is Ein ani roe dvarav shel Rabbi Natan ba'elu. Who are the Elu? The Elu is the women who satisfy the conditions of the Opintas. Yeah? The women who satisfy the conditions of the Opintas, where Rabbi Natan in the Mishnah says that they get according to these numbers. But Rabbi says, no, even if they satisfy the conditions of the Opintas, they still get in accordance with in accordance with the Shitat HaShiyabudim. Okay? That's what the Raivad says. So we have three shittas in what it means Cholkin B'Shaveh. Okay? Fine. Now, I'd like to explain the Gemara. The Gemara, in accordance... So first of all, we start out with the idea that Rabbi Natan was thinking of the CG consistent division. That's what he had in mind. All right? So how do we understand the Gemara? We understand the Gemara this way. Already in the time of the Mishnah, which was Rabbi, yeah? Rabbi, after all, was in the time of the Mishnah. He was the editor of the Mishnah. Already at that time, the rule that was accepted among all the courts, all the yeshivas, yeah, whenever three women came, and when they had married the man on the same day, and they, whenever that happened, and it happened, you know, every Monday and Thursday over there, yeah, whenever that happened, one divided in accordance with the Shitata Shiabudim. And now I'm going according to the Raivad, right? I'm saying according to the Raivad that Rebbe's Shita was the Shitata Shiabudim. Okay? So this was what was going on. Rebbe's Shita was the Shitata Shiabudim, and it was accepted, and it was put into operation for dozens of years, maybe hundreds of years, okay? All right. So now when the Gemara comes and says, Taltin v'tlata v'tintahu d'itla, that she had, why does she get 50? We know according to the rule that is operated all the time that she has to get 33 and a third, yeah? So why are you giving her 50? Yeah? That's what itla means. The word itla, gentlemen, is very, very difficult. What does it mean, itla? Why does she have 33 and a third? Where is the Gemara coming from? I say the Gemara has to be coming from someplace. What it's coming from is this din of Rebbe interpreted according to the Raivad. Okay? The Cholkin B'Shalei. All right? And what they, so the Gemara tries, goes through all sorts of contortions and somersaults in the air in order to, these are very strange ukintas. I mean, we know that ukintas often are strange, but these are, you know, among the strangest in the Gemara. So they go through all these contortions and ukintas in order to try to fit the Mishnah to the rule that they knew. They knew this rule. Yeah? So they try to fit this mission to the rule that they know. And they do it with the Okimtas. Yes, you have Shmuel, and you have Rabbi Yaakov min HaPkod, and you have Tosfos who say they don't understand what's going on. That's it. Okay. Also the Rif who says he doesn't understand what's going on. All right, so we have these Okimtas, we have the, and then comes the end, the bottom line, is literally the bottom line in this Gemara, yes? Tanya, the bottom two lines. Tanya, Zum Mishnat Rabbi Natan. Comes the man who knows the Braitot, and he says, he comes to the yeshiva, and he says, gentlemen, why are you trying to make these strange ukintas? It's not necessary, yes? This Zum Mishnat Rabbi Natan, it's not the halacha. It's not the halacha. Zum Mishnat Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Omer, Ein Ani Roeh Dvarav Shel Rabbi Natan Be'elu, Ela Cholkot B'Shaveh. Rabbi says, no, yes, I disagree with Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Natan, Kvodo B'Mkomo Munach, yes, I have a lot of respect for him. He was my Rebbe, by the way. Rabbi Natan was Rebbe's Rebbe. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, and that's why Lachen Satalti et HaMishnah Lufi Rabbi Natan. I mean, the Stam Mishnah was, I quoted my Rebbe, but that's not the halacha, yes? He was a tremendously smart man, but it's not the halacha. The halacha is what we know. What do we know? Chokim B'Shaveh. Yeah? That they divide equally. What divide equally? What we know, the Shitata Shiabudim, in other words, divide equally according to the Raivad. Okay? And so the Gemara Asishapya, yes, the Gemara fits beautifully into this explanation of the Mishnah. It's 5 to 8. You know, maybe we could even end up with this very beautiful madrash. Right here. This madrash was told to me I believe it was one of the Asher Yeshivas of Yeshiva University. I think it was Rav Shechter. Okay. Here it is. So let's look over here at Gimel. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Arba'a dvarim haya Rabbi Akiva doresh, v'dvaray nir'in midvarav. There's four things that Rabbi Akiva said, and I disagree with him, and I think I'm right. Okay, what are the four? The first one of the four things. Darash Rabbi Akiva, v'tere sara et ben agar ha-mitzrit asher yalda l'Avraham mitzachek. Ein tzchok ha-amur kan ela avodat kochavim. It's when it says mitzachek, it means avodah zarah. Shenemar, how do we know that laughter or games, because tzchok and tzchok and mitzchak are similar in Hebrew. It has very similar meaning, as we'll see soon. Ein tzchok amur kan ela avodah shenemar v'yeshev ha'am le'chol v'shato v'yakumu le'tzachek. Yes, in the Egel Azov, they sat down to eat and drink, and they got up to play. Yeah, what is playing? Avodah Zarah. Melamed. So what does it mean? Ein tzchok ha'amur kan ela avodat kochavim. Melamed shaita imenu sara roa et Yishmael bone b'matzin b'tzad chagavim umale umaktir la'avodat kochavim. Yishmael was doing Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Lezer b'no shel Rabbi Yossi Aglila omer, ein tzchok ha'amur kan ela gilui arayot, shenamar ba elai ha'eved letzachek bi. This is by the wife of Potiphar. Okay? So that shows that playing, game theory, yeah, is gilui arayot. מלמד שהייתה אמנו שרה רואה את ישמעאל מחבש את האמות. This is, there's a mistake in the girsa over here. מחבש את האמות ומענה את הנשים. So he was doing גילוי הרויס. Okay? That's what רבי יוסי הגלילי says. רבי שמואל אומר, אין לשון צחוק אלא שפיכות דמים. Shneimah, and this is Shmuel Bet in Givon, which is a few kilometers from here. Vayomer Avner el Yoav yakuna na'arim v'yisachaku lefaneinu. Let the lads play. Vayakumu vayavru b'mispar vayachziku ish b'rosh re'eyu v'charbo b'tzad re'eyu v'yiplu yachdav. They had a bloody fight. They were all killed. מלמד שהייתה אמנו שרה רואה את ישמעאל נוטל קשת וחיצים ומברק כלפי יצחק. אוקיי. ואני אומר, so there's three cardinal sins, גילו הרויס, שפיכוסטומים, and עבודס כוכובים. The three worst things that you can do in our faith, right? And ישמעאל was doing all of them. We get three different days. But each day is one of the cardinal sins. V'ani, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, yomer, chas v'shalom, shiyeh beveito shel oto tzadik kahu, kach, efshar lemi shenemar alav, ki yedatev, leman asher yitzave et banav ve et beito acharav, ושמרו דרך השם לעשות צדקה ומשפט. שיהיה בביתו עבודת כוכבים וגילוי עריות ושפיכות דמים. We have this beautiful pasuk, yes, in Vayera. I know, הקדוש ברוך הוא says about Avraham Avinu, I know that he will teach his children and his house that they will keep the way of God to do justice and tzedakah. Is it possible on such a person, yes, that in his house there was shvichus damim and gilui arayos and avodas kochavim? Impossible. Yeah. Impossible. Yes. Ela, ein tzchok ha'amur kan, ela le'inyan yerusha. When you're talking about tzchok or tzchok, games, the games we're talking about over here have to do with inheritance. These are inheritance games, yes? שכשנולד אבינו יצחק לאברהם אבינו, היו הכל שמחים ואומרים נולד בן לאברהם, נולד בן לאברהם. נוחל את העולם ונוטל שני חלקים. והיה ישמעאל מצחק ואומר, אל תהיו שותים, אל תהיו שותים. אני בוחר ואני נוטל שני חלקים. Yeah, so when Yitzchak was born, the whole world said, here, finally, Avraham had a son, and he will take two-thirds, and Yishmael will take one-third. And Yishmael said, no, he laughed, well, what do they know? Yeah, they don't know the Torah. The Torah says that the Bechor gets two-thirds, and the other one gets one-third. Yeah. So he was laughing, and this was the game. Which game was it? The Yerusha game, yes? שמתשובת הדבר אתה לומד שנאמר כי לא יירש בן האמה הזאת עם בני עם יצחק. That's over there, yes? The beginning of the ותרס הורס בן הגורר המצריס אשר ילדו לאברהם מצחק, and as it גורש את האמה הזאת ואת בנה, כי לא יירש בן האמה הזאת עם בני עם יצחק. Okay? So this is, what does this show? Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says that games are not avodas kochavim, they're not gilui arayos, none of these things are called playing, they're not shvichas domim, that's also not called playing. What's called playing? Yerusha, dividing an estate. Shkoyach.